His divine grace, Lesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Pujai. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivrajita Acharya Stuttara Sutta Sri Srimad. His divine grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Go Premanande Hari Hari Go Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Agaristhya Samadavati. Agarishti Asambhadavati. Agarishti Shri Shri Guru Golamba. I'm going to start this morning by Let's take a close look at Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's Pranati. We just recited several times. This, by the way, this is written by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciple, Ananta Vasudev. He was one of the leaders of the Gaudiya Mutt. He was like the spiritual leader, one step down from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. There were two leading devotees, Kunja Bihari, who was like a manager, and this Ananta Vasudev. So he wrote Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's Pranati, and he also wrote Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji's Pranati, Bhaktivinod Thakur's, and Jagannath Das Babaji. He wrote all of those. And they're still, just as we recite them, the ones that we recite, they're recited now throughout the Gaudiya Math as well. So Ananta Vasudev. I don't know if you know the story. He was one of those who was instrumental in the breakup of the Gaudiya Mutt. So he deviated at some point. So when he passed away, Srila Prabhupada was told. And devotees asked, well, Prabhupada, what happened to him when he died? And Prabhupada said, he went back to Godhead. And the devotees were surprised. Prabhupada went back to God. We hear all these bad things about him. And Prabhupada said, my spiritual master accepted his service. Therefore, he has gone back to Godhead. Quite an amazing spiritual insight from Srila Prabhupada. So this, we have the first line, which of course is very similar to Srila Prabhupada, just the name is changed, kind of a general. But the next line, the next, there's four slokas, of course. Shibarcha Bhanavi Devi Daita Kripabdaye Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Dayane Prabhave Namaha. So this first, this is of course the name of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. It said in Bhaktivikasa Swami in his book, he says that he gave it to himself. Says he accepted this name and began calling himself this. So what does it mean? Sri Barshabhanavi Devi, that's Srimati Radharani, of course, the daughter of Rishabhanu Maharaj. She was Sri Barshabhanavi Devi Daita. Daita means the lover. And of course, Das. So it's a name, it means he's the servant of the lover of Srimati Radharani, in other words, Krishna. Kripabdaye, an ocean of mercy. Krishna Sambandha Vijnana. So he's teaching Vijnana, the science of Krishna Sambandha. Of course, we have Sambandha, Vidya, and Prayojana. But in the general sense, Sambandha means any, here it says the relationship with Krishna, but the science of Krishna consciousness, you can say it means. Adayane, who is the deliverer. So the, I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Daita Das, another name for Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who is favored by Srimati Radharani, and who is the ocean of transcendental mercy and the deliverer of the science of Krishna. Interesting way it's translated here. Then Madhuri Ojjala Premadya, so he's teaching or giving devotional service in the mood of Madhurya. Of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give us that the highest devotion to Krishna, the highest prema, Ujjvala, brilliant, you see this word comes up a lot, brilliant, brilliant love of Krishna, prema. And Sri Rupa Anuga, following Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Srila Rupa Goswami. In other words, he's giving that in the line of Rupa Goswami, of course. The teachings that he's giving about Krishna prema. And Sri Gaura Karuna Shakti, Vigrahaya. So Vigraha, of course, means personified. Here you see, unto the personified. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is here being described as a personified mercy energy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, the personified energy of Sri Chaitanya's mercy, who deliver devotional service which is enriched with conjugal love of Radha and Krishna, coming exactly in the line of revelation of Srila Rupa Goswami. So there's so much substance in that those two lines. And then the last line, Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupa Anuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine. Again, Gauravani Sri Murtaye. So again, the personified Murti of Gauravani, Srila Prabhupada is Gauravani Pracharine, preaching the Gauravani, the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta is here to describe this as personified teachings. Dinatarine, deliverer of the fallen. Now Rupa Anuga, here it's interesting the way it's translated. Usually Rupa Anuga means followers, which means people, right? Followers of Rupa Goswami. But here it's translated as the philosophy, following the teachings of Rupa Goswami. So Virudha Upasiddhanta. Virudha, against the unauthorized statements. Dvanta, the darkness, Harine, unto you who are removing. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you who are the personified teachings of Lord Chaitanya. You are the deliverer of the fallen souls. You do not tolerate any statement which is against the teachings of devotional service enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami. So this, of course, is one of the main characteristics of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He was so uncompromising in any Upasiddhanta. The guru couldn't stand it. He had to speak out. And even though it caused problems sometimes, he had to speak out. So personification with someone who's setting the record straight, what devotional service is all about. Here's a little, most, today I'm going to be reading some teachings of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. I'll get to that. Just a couple of introductory things I wanted to mention. Now, of course, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was, well, it says he's teaching devotional service. So he, as Srila Prabhupada wanted to do and did somewhat setting up the system of examinations for learning the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, if you've ever seen the Srila Prabhupada's first Bhakti Shastri test, it was 10 questions. Like, you know, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Really simple things like that. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he, one thing is, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had very many highly qualified devotees. And they did very wonderful service. You know, we may have a certain view of the Gaudiya Math, but they were quite incredible. We've been hearing, of course, something about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and his disciples, but they were, you know, he was very strict. I mean, he trained up his disciples very well. So he had many wonderful disciples who did very great service. So he also had a very, you know, high standards for people studying the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And so this is the what, in order to enroll, you might say, in the course of Bhakti Shastri, you had to have read all of these books here. Now one thing, what's interesting is that he really liked his disciples. Of course, he's Bengali and he's preaching in Bengal, so most of his disciples were Bengalis, especially before, you know, it spread all over India. But even while in India, there's a tendency, of course this still happens today, I suspect that you'll probably find Gaudiya Math temples will attract Bengalis in different parts of India. So he had many, his disciples were mainly Bengalis, at least in the beginning. So he had them reading Bengali books. So they had to read, before taking the Bhakti Shastri course, they had to have read Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Bhakti Ratnakara. Bhakti Ratnakara is the, you know, the generation after Lord Chaitanya's followers, about Srinivas Acharya and so on, those devotees. Jiva Dharma, that's by, of course, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which is a big book. And it had one thing about, and also Chaitanya Shikshamrita, these are both by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They cover the whole range of Krishna consciousness, all the philosophy and practices of Krishna consciousness. They're like, they teach, you can say, Siddhanta or Sambandha and Abhideya together. Both of these books, actually, they go all the way up, just like the Nectar Devotion takes us all the way up to the highest levels of Krishna, Gopi Bhava and so on. These books also do that. They go step by step up to higher and higher levels. So Jiva Dharma, of course, does it in a format, something like a fiction, a novel. And Chaitanya Shikshamata is more scheduled step by step. It covers many, many topics actually. And then Sat Kriya Sar Deepika, that is that Gopal Bhatta Goswami's? Yeah. That's by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Gopal Bhatta Goswami is known as our Smriti Acharya, so he was the expert in Smriti, the rules and regulations, like Hari Bhakti Vilas book. So he was involved with that. So he wrote this book, Sat Kriya Sar Deepika. And finally, the Gaudiya Kantahar, which is a collection of slokas, I think compiled by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, I'm not sure. Yeah, probably. So that was just, all of these you have to have read before you can start taking the course. His Bhakti Shastri course. So a couple of little things. I had some biographical about it. I was listening to the classes devotees have been giving, and they covered most of these things. There's just a couple of things that stuck out to me. I'll just mention a few dates here. This was mentioned. I'll mention it again. He was born in 1874. And he chanted 1 billion names. He made that vow. That started in 1905. It took him 9 years and 4 months to do it. And he was chanting at least 300,000 names every day, which is amazing. If you chant for 2 hours around, it takes you 24 hours. So you have to chant a little faster than two hours for 16 rounds. 2 hours for 16 rounds. So you have to chant really quickly. Now he initiated his, so he started doing that in 1905, just to get some perspective on these dates. In 1906 he initiated his first disciple. Now Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji and Bhaktivinoda Thakur were still alive at that time. And he wasn't a sannyasi either. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta hadn't taken sannyas, but people were attracted to him. One interesting thing I'll mention while I'm thinking of it, one of his sannyas disciples was a disciple of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And of course that was after Bhaktivinoda Thakur had passed away. So he completed his commentary in 1916 on Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now if you read Srila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll see how often he quotes Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He relied extensively on those two, their commentaries, to write his own commentary. And so that was in 1916. So that was just after the passing away of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur passed away in 1914, in June. And then in November of the following year, about a year and a half later, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj passed away. So that's... Now there was that period after that, of course that was very difficult for him. We heard something about that. He was so despondent, spiritually despondent. He didn't know if he could carry on in their absence. But then he took sannyas. You know how he gave himself sannyas. And that was in 1918, so he was 44 years old when he took sannyas. And he, you know, sannyas wasn't really practiced in the Gaudiya Sampradaya at that time. Everyone was just Babaji's. So he studied the sannyas systems, you can say, of the, especially Ramanujacharya and also Madhvacharya and those lines. He studied extensively to revive sannyas, which is in context of the varnashram, you might say. Babaji is transcendental paramahamsa, and he wanted to institute the other sannyas. Now his first, just a few more of these things, his first annual Vyas Puja was held in 1924, which was his 50th birthday. One thing I wanted to mention, actually, I just slipped this in there. So on his 70th birthday, so his 50th was in 1924. So his 70th birthday, of course, after he had passed away, was 1944. And on that day, Srila Prabhupada gave him a special offering. He launched Bhakti Godhead magazine. So Bhakti Godhead magazine is 80 years old today. So that's a gift that Prabhupada gave to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that's still going on. Also, his first Vyasa Puja, again, it was celebrated when he was 50 years old. And at that time, that was the first time these pranam mantras were recited publicly. Those were, as I said, they were written by Ananta Vasudeva. And that was also when he accepted the title of Prabhupada. Before that time, he wasn't called. So beginning from his 50th birthday and his appearance day, devotees started calling him Prabhupada. Okay, now I'm going to quote some. I have many quotes here, so I don't know how far I'll get. But I went through this book called Amritavani, published by, what's it called, Touchstone Media, Ishwar Das in Vrindavan. And it's actually a translation of a book that was written by one of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples. It's a collection of his teachings, and it's set up in a question and answer format. Basically, the devotee, his name is Bhakti Ma... How's it? Bhakti... Oh, now I've forgotten. I've been trying to remember his name for a couple of days because the first word of his name is a word I'd never heard before. Ma... Anyway. This Bhagavat Maharaj. Anyway, the last two words are Bhagavat Maharaj. He's the one who wrote this book. So he compiled the teachings of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He just made up questions, basically. And then he looked through his teachings and he matched up, he found answers that he could match up to the questions. That's how the book is set up generally. So Amritavani, it was originally called Srila Prabhupada Upadeshamrita. But the devotees, when they translated it to English, they saw there may be some confusion because of this title, Upadeshamrita. So they changed it to Amritavani. If you have Vedabhas, you can find it there. It's in the writings of the previous Acharya section. So in the beginning, in the very beginning of this book, there's 108 instructions. So I grabbed a few of those. This is the first one. Our supreme occupation is to serve the residents of Vraja who are afflicted by separation from Krishna. So I just found this intriguing. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta often had ways to express things that were quite unique and brilliant, really brilliant. So I thought, I wonder what he's really implying here. I'm not quite sure I understand what he's implying by this. Our supreme occupation is to serve the residents of Vraja who are afflicted by separation from Krishna. It's almost as if our serving them is going to help them somehow. Of course, maybe it will, because they're witnessing by our service. They're seeing that more devotees are coming to Krishna, the person that they're in love with. Anyway, there may be many ways to interpret what exactly he's saying here, but I just thought it was kind of an intriguing statement. We're meant to serve them who are in suffering. They're suffering, so we should serve them. That's kind of what's implied also. Now, it is the first duty of the most compassionate souls to divert the wretched taste of the living entity. Now, by the way, this is all written in Bengali originally. We may get the sense that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was speaking English all the time because we get it all translated. But he was speaking Bengali and writing in Bengali, mostly. Of course, he spoke English. And he went to, even his very first schooling was at an English school. So he had a lot of English education. Of course, he was fluent in English. But he spoke generally in Bengali. So these are translations from the Bengali, mostly. It is the first duty of the most compassionate souls to divert the wretched taste of the living entities. It is more beneficial to save even one soul from Mahamaya's prison than to open millions of hospitals. So this is, you know, an indication of his transcendental view. I mean, who would think this outside of Krishna consciousness and someone hearing from Acharya, but like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, better to make one devotee than open millions of hospitals. Just imagine. Most people think, oh, opening a hospital. Especially in India, of course, it was considered a very charitable thing to do. Oh, so many people are suffering. They're in the hospitals. No way to take care of them. And so here's one of these stark statements from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Better make one devotee. Because somewhere I was reading about Bhaktisiddhanta, some statement he was making about, you know, just think of the odds, millions and trillions of whatever to one, that a person actually becomes, of all the living entities in this universe, this room is full of an unlimited number of living entities. So when one of them becomes a devotee, what an amazing thing it is. What are the odds? It's practically impossible for any living particular living entity in this material world to get the mercy of Krishna. So if someone is actually, you know, pulled out of Maya's grip and brought to Krishna consciousness, then that is, you can't compare, there's nothing in the material world that can compare to it, obviously, that's the point. So the next one here, as soon as we learn about the truth, we should become fixed in it. We should not waste even a moment of the time we have left in our lives on sense gratification. Rather, we should use all our time to worship Hari. Now, this is definitely a recurrent theme. Of course, it's a recurrent theme in Prabhupada's teachings also. You listen to Prabhupada's lectures, and practically every lecture he makes the same point. Don't waste a moment. The human form of life is so rare, and so on. So this is going to come up again. I'm going to maybe say a little more about it in other contexts. So then he says, unless and until we accept the spiritual master as a manifestation of the Supreme Lord, as non-different from him, we will not be able to chant the holy names. Now this is also, there'll be more about the spiritual master, but this is also something, of course, Prabhupada, all the Shastras recommend, Prabhupada recommend, and he also, and he puts it in these very, very, you know, strong terms. He's Krishna. You have to accept the Guru as Krishna. Non-different from him. Here he doesn't say simultaneously one and different or his representative. Of course, we do know what it means. You know that he's not actually God, but you're supposed to see him exactly as you would. Exactly as if Krishna came and told you to do something. The spiritual master is telling you to do something. You're supposed to take it in the same way. It's an instruction coming from Krishna. That's the idea. So he says, to teach us how to serve him, the Supreme Lord incarnated as the spiritual master. The confidential purport of the undisputed truth that is spoken boldly. Let me start this again. This is a beautiful sentence. The confidential purport of the undisputed truth that is spoken boldly will be realized only after hundreds of lifetimes or even hundreds of yugas. Unless we spend hundreds of gallons of hard-earned blood, it will not be possible to make others understand the truth. So again, this idea of making devotees. I mean, we have the experience. So few people have any interest. It just doesn't click. It doesn't connect at all. So he says, you know, hundreds of yugas trying to convince someone. Sometimes you get somebody who's stubborn and dull-headed, you try to convince them of something. So you try to spend hundreds of yugas trying to convince people of Krishna consciousness. That's how difficult it is to turn someone away from Maya's influence. The actual person behind the word Krishna is not the person the multitude of blind followers understand by the words like God, Allah, or even Ishvara or Paramatma. These words are used in various languages to indicate the separate sources of effulgence connected with Krishna. Sources of effulgence connected with Krishna. Such persons cannot grasp the complete understanding of the word Krishna. So in some ways, I mean, I feel this too, that maybe you don't even like to use the word God when you're talking about Krishna. Because actually he's above God. In one sense, you can say, the Paramatma Sundarbha of Jiva Goswami is actually about this. The Krishna and his forms involved with this material world, Lord Vishnu or the three Vishnus, they're what you might say are God, because they are the controller, they're creators, they're involved with this world. So that's the vision that people have. It only goes that far. They don't understand Krishna. Krishna's above God. God's coming from him. People say, Well, who created God? Well, Krishna did, we can say. he comes before everything else. And of course, he's so amazing that he doesn't even have to think about it, basically. He just does it. It just happens. He's not really concerned about... That's another thing. People think that, you know, God has no other business except to be concerned about us here in the material world. Right? He's just got his eye on us all the time. That's what he does. That's his pleasure. No, it's not, of course. He's got his eye on Srimati Radharani and the gopis. That's what he's concerned with. So people go with it, we say God. Well, we're not talking about God. Whatever conception you have, our God is different. He's beyond God. So let's see. Making a show of possessing transcendental knowledge by accepting initiation and actually achieving transcendental knowledge are not the same thing. So this is a theme we'll see more as I read about this. You know, you have to be very serious in Krishna. We were hearing about, you know, what went on in the mutts, in the Gaudiya mutts, what the lives were of the inmates, as Prabhupada sometimes called them. So they slept maybe 4 hours a day, and the rest of the time they were engaged in devotional service. They had so much to do. Even Srila Bhaktisiddhanta liked disciples to chant 64 rounds, but he said, well, as long as you're serving, then chant while you're serving, and so on. So he also very much wanted active service. He didn't want people sitting around all day long. Now, this is a little aside, but there's a story of Krishnadas Babaji. From the time Krishnadas Babaji, I know many of you know who he is, because he was a Babaji. He chanted, and he chanted, and he chanted, and he chanted. So even from his early days in the mutt, he was chanting. He was in his room, he was chanting all day long, and some devotees didn't like it. They said, well, he's not doing service like the rest of us, so they complained to the management. So in fact, maybe Bhaktisiddhanta himself, anyway, they were told, okay, you can join him, you can chant with him. So they tried for one day, and they couldn't. So that was the end of that. Nobody complained anymore. He could do it, so he did it. Okay, so we'll go on here. If we do not always follow the orders of Guru and the Vaishnavas, we will find ourselves in great danger. As soon as we remove ourselves from their shelter, Maya will capture us. Then we will again wander throughout the universe as Maya's servants. I tend to think we're safe once we started, but there's always a danger. People will always discuss worldly topics. We should remain inattentive to such discussions. Discuss literature like Sharanagati, Prarthana, and Prema Bhakti Chandrika. Interesting that he mentions these works. Of course, these are devotional poems. Sharanagati, Bhakti Vinod Thakur's songs, Prarthana, Narottam Das, Prema Bhakti Chandrika. That's Narottam too, right? So these wonderful heartfelt songs, devotional heartfelt songs, he said, discuss these instead of discussing mundane topics. It is certainly good to associate with scripture. This is from the same quote, same context. Later, by the way, not only some of these instructions are also taken from letters, just like we have Srila Prabhupada's letters compiled, so they also had some. He would write them out by hand, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And they actually were compiled in a book that was published of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's. It's a multi-volume book, I heard, of his letters that he wrote to disciples, especially. So some of these quotes may come from letters. So here he says, it is certainly good to associate with scripture. Later on, we will require association with saintly persons to learn the art of worshiping the Lord. So this is, I thought this was quite interesting too. Of course, we get so much from scripture, but he's also emphasizing that we need to get personal association to see how the Paramahamsa pure devotees are always engaged in Krishna service and become enthused by contact with them. Now here's something about family life. Family life is favorable for devotees because when a devotee enters family life, he enters a temple. For a devotee, there is no difference between entering household life and entering renounced life. However, household life is unfavorable for non-devotees. There is a huge difference between attached materialists entering household life and the household life of a devotee. Because a devotee enters family life only to favorably cultivate Krishna consciousness, he should remain aloof from bad association and idle talk. He should faithfully execute the limbs of bhakti, his hearing and chanting, with enthusiasm, confidence, and patience. So here we see another example of this, no idle talk. Prabhupada may have seen, those of you who get this, Prabhupada today that comes in the email, I get it every day. So recently there was a story there of Srila Prabhupada was in his room and he heard Umapati outside, he was his servant then, and he was talking with some devotee and there was some giggling going on. And they were just having a chat out there. So Prabhupada called him in and he said, "Were you gossiping?" And he said, "Well, Prabhupada, we were talking about other devotees, if that's gossip." Prabhupada said, "Yes, that's gossip. That's gossip. We cannot have this." He was very concerned about it. He said, "This will ruin everything." This he called it gossip. Prajalpa, in other words, prajalpa. So often prajalpa is translated as gossip, but of course, we tend to have a different idea of what gossip means. Gossip means, you know, spreading rumors about people. That's kind of how it's used in our culture. Gossiping. So the really prajapa is any mundane talk. That comes up also. Srila Prabhupada also was quite concerned about that, actually. I was thinking of it, and you know, and Prabhupada pointed out politics specifically. He didn't want devotees talking about politics. He's saying this year is election year, right? So devotees may have a tendency to be talking about politics. But Prabhupada didn't, he didn't. Of course, he didn't. You can think when Prabhupada's here among us, you know, would anybody, it was kind of like unheard of. Devotees didn't care what was happening. I mean, I know in my early days as a devotee, I didn't even know who the president was, hardly. It's like, who cares? Really, it doesn't. So that's really the attitude, actually. You don't hear, there's that other story. I could go on about this for a while. I'm preaching to myself because I have an attraction to worldly katha, too. But at the New York Rath Yatra in 1976, Toshan Prabhu tells this story. There was something, I guess, about the devotees of the Rath Yatra in Time magazine. So it was sitting around in the quarters where Prabhupada was living in New York. And at some point, Prabhupada saw it. And he said, "Devotees should not read this." He was talking about mundane magazines in general. He said, "This makes... because it makes us think the material world is real." So that's the problem with getting involved in all of these things. I remember I was going to one website where some devotee was encouraging devotees to vote. And I thought, I don't really think Prabhupada would want us to vote. I really don't think he wanted us involved in that at all. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says you can't change one iota, this material world, by one iota. In other words, it's all going to go on its own. So we don't need to get involved in that kind of thing. That's actually prajalpa, talking about these things. So I'll move on to something else. Everything in this world is meant to be used in the spiritual master's service for Krishna's service. We will not find benefit if we think anything is meant for our pleasure. If we fail to see that all objects in this world are intended for service to Guru and Krishna, we will certainly become degraded. An ideal disciple realizes this fact and always makes service to his guru and Krishna his life and soul. So, of course, this is the theme. I mean, we say these things, we know these things, but our acharyas really mean it when they say it. Like I always remember this, it was in a letter where Srila Prabhupada wrote to Brahmananda in the early days. He said, Please make your life so not one moment is without ISKCON thought, he said. So he wanted devotees always to be thinking about their own spiritual lives and about spreading Krishna consciousness. That's what we should be thinking about, rather than what's going on in this material world. So then a householder devotee must remember that his house belongs to Krishna, and he himself is a pet dog that Krishna maintains. It's like, you know, ideally, maybe you get this idea. I know I myself, when I came to Krishna consciousness, and you think, well, once you hear the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, I'm not this body, then you think, well, I just need to completely renounce this world and just, you know, chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day and not have any kind of life whatsoever. So what is, how does household life fit into that? Well, that means you have to think of yourself as Krishna's dog. This is Krishna's house. This is Krishna's property. I'm taking care of it for him. This is a place where I can, you know, survive so that I can offer service to Krishna. So this has to be the mentality. Our spiritual masters are trying to get us to understand that. So Bhaktisiddhanta here, he writes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, O Lord, I do not know what is good and what is bad. I simply engage in your service. I guard objects that belong to you. One should serve Krishna with all that he possesses, knowing well that Krishna is the master of his household. Only those who can offer everything to Krishna by giving up material attachment are able to chant Krishna's holy name. So, of course, this is the idea. This is the key, this whole idea of attachment. We have to give up our attachment to whatever there is in the material world. I've been reading a book about the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and this is what Arjuna faced. He was attached. So there's a symbol that his attachment was to his relatives, and he had to kill them all himself. That's how much Krishna was demanding of him. So we have to kill our attachments too. We have to get past the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita by killing our attachments, so then we can progress onward in Krishna consciousness. So, of course, it's very difficult. We're attached to our attachments. We cherish them. We don't want to give them up. Because we identify, we think, this is me. This is suicide to give up my attachments. So that's why we hear these instructions. Only those who can offer everything to Krishna by giving up material attachment are able to chant Krishna's holy name. Chanting the holy name of Krishna is not possible unless one gives up attachment for family life and offers everything in Krishna's service. So we have these very heavy, heavy. Of course, we know, right? So Bhaktisiddhanta was heavy. He wasn't only heavy on the non-devotees, but he was heavy in training his disciples. He wasn't pulling any punches, as we say. If you want, because what is spiritual life? It means ultimately you have to be 100% pure. To associate with Krishna, there's a verse in the Upanishad that says, to know Brahman, or to associate with Brahman, you have to become Brahman. So that means you have to become completely pure yourself to enter into transcendence. And maybe we have the expectation that somehow there's going to be some magic moment when I'm leaving this body that I'm going to be transformed in a moment. But no, actually, we have to, before that time, we have to enter into that stage, qualify ourselves to associate with Krishna. So, I don't know how long I should go on here, but I'll go on a little more. Just consider how Hari, Guru, and Vaishnava are placed in succession. So this is interesting. When you read Bhaktisiddhanta and quotes from him, he really liked this phrase, Hari Guru and Vaishnava. Our goal in life is to serve Hari Guru Vaishnava. So of course we have it in Narottam's song. So here he's saying, just consider how Hari Guru and Vaishnava are placed in succession. The spiritual master is the center. So Guru is in the center. He has Hari on one side and Vaishnava on the other side. That's the point he's making here. In the song, they're in succession with the Guru in the middle, Hari, Guru, Vaishnava. And he says, the spiritual master sits in the center, placing the Supreme Lord and the Vaishnavas on his lap. By firmly catching hold of the spiritual master's feet, we'll automatically receive the mercy of the Lord and his devotees. Beautiful analogy he's giving. If the spiritual master is pleased, Sri Hari and the Vaishnavas will also be pleased. If we cannot become unalloyed devotees of the spiritual master, if we cannot make the spiritual master our life and soul, then we will spoil everything and will not be able to receive the mercy of either the Lord or his devotees. Ultimately, we will be deceived and not attain the Lord's service. Srila Prabhupada would often quote this Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, saying the order of the spiritual master should be the life and soul of the disciple. So we hear this, it may be just, you know, like some slogan that we hear, but Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was very serious about it. We do actually, the order of the spiritual master, or the spiritual master, has to become our life and soul. That's the way he makes it here. We must make the spiritual master our life and soul. Even that this word, I think of spiritual master, which is spiritual master. Actually, the word master is there. He's our master. What happens when you have a master, then you slave. Bhakti Rakshika Sridhar Maharaj, I've read some of his books, and he used the word a lot, slave. We have to become the slave of Krishna, the slave of the spiritual master. You have no independence. Whatever you're told to do, that's what you do. That's your life. So that's what it means, spiritual master. Let's see. The Lord is the ultimate seer of everything. There's a whole section of Bhakti Vikasa. Well, no, there's a section, paragraph, or a section, I'll say, called the seer and the seen. So there's some philosophical presentation of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta using these terms. The basic idea is that we're always subordinate to Krishna. And he even says that when we come before the deities, we don't come for the sense gratification for our eyes, which is hard not to do because they're so beautiful and they dress so beautifully. But we're actually there so Krishna will see us. We're meant to come before the devotees to expose ourselves, to stand naked before the Lord, you might say, so that he can see us and analyze us and help us. And we can get the blessings of the Lord, like Srimati Radharani, she's raising her hand and offering to give us blessings. But we have to expose our struggles in Krishna consciousness and our hearts and so on. So we're the seen, we're meant to be seen by Krishna. So here it says, the Lord is the ultimate seer of everything, but various obstacles impede the vision of the conditioned souls. He sees, but we don't see. Of course, he sees us, but we don't really see him. By expressing displeasure at or restlessness with the Lord's arrangements, one certainly invites inauspiciousness. In other words, if we complain about what life is dealing us. The surrendered devotees have no concept other than to engage constantly in Lord Hari's service by being pleased to accept the Lord's arrangements. So, of course, we say this is Krishna's mercy. We're meant to accept everything as Krishna's mercy. I just read in a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the way he puts it, he says, the attitude is that we don't say to Krishna, why are you making me walk in the hot sun? Because actually what Krishna is, the reason you're walking in the hot sun, Krishna is saying, is because there are only two paths for you to take, and the other path was full of thorns. So I've actually given you the easier path under the hot sun rather than the path that's full of thorns. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, that's the way we can look when we have trouble, we're facing some challenge. Well, Krishna could have given me the thorny path, but now I just have to tolerate some hot sun on my head. It's easier. That's it. An exalted devotee sees the material world as the Lord's mercy. So this is kind of the same theme here. We don't hate the material world. We see it as Krishna's mercy, which means, of course, that's a way of seeing it as Krishna. In one sense, we're supposed to see this world as Krishna's energy. So it is Krishna, in one sense. It's a representation of him, at least. He says, mercy or compassion is worshipable. It is not possible to surpass the Lord's compassion. In other words, nobody can be more compassionate. Whatever is happening to us is Krishna's unsurpassable compassion. If one sees this material world, which is meant for the Lord's enjoyment, or the personification of the Lord's mercy in the spirit of enjoyment, one will certainly be punished. So, of course, that's the other side of it. We're not supposed to be looking to enjoy this material world, but use it as an opportunity to awaken our love for Krishna. A practitioner should know that anarta nivritti, and this I thought this was interesting, a practitioner should know that anarta nivritti, so we know it, anarta nivritti, right? The clearing stage when we get rid of our anartas by doing our bhajan, is the last platform before attaining the goal of life. So because when you get past that, I often think of this that, you know, prema is just, I don't know how many lifetimes away prema is. It's such a high goal. So maybe I can aim for getting through anarta nivritti and getting to nishtha. So here he says it's a goal, actually. When you get through anarta nivritti, you've reached the goal. Because one thing is when you get through that, when the anartas are cleared, or mostly cleared, nishtha praishu, then things move a lot more smoothly. Now it's like we're running in waist deep water, struggling, pushing. But then you go with the flow. You get in the current. When you pass through anarta nivritti, then you feel impelled to go on. You're very ecstatic. So that's, in one sense, you can say that's the goal, because you've kind of made it up. It's more downhill after that, I'd say. Let's see. Then he says, part of that understanding is to know that unfavorable situations create situations favorable for devotional service in the next moment. So that's again on that same theme. So, actually, we don't have too much left, if you don't mind sitting and listening to more of these. Actions performed out of duty are based on the mind, intelligence, and false ego. So this is talking about sadhana bhakti, vaidhi bhakti, as opposed to bhava bhakti. Actions performed out of duty are based on the mind, intelligence, and false ego, whereas devotional service is an activity of the soul. If we have not acted out of pure love, we cannot call our activities pure devotion. Only what we perform with love and devotion can be called pure devotion. Duty is but regulation. Devotional service is the soul's constitutional propensity, and to maintain a sense of duty is the mind's propensity. If we wish to find fortune, we must follow the soul's constitutional propensity. So we find this theme also in Bhakti Sandarbha. Of course, we have to practice sadhana bhakti, but we have to get past that, in a sense, vaidhi bhakti. In other words, doing it because I have to do it. Duty. You have to come to the platform where you're doing it spontaneously out of love for Krishna. That's really bhakti. Shraddha ratir bhakti ranukramishyati. Kapiladev tells us these steps. We have faith, but the bhakti there means prema bhakti. Shraddha rati, when you get rati bhava, that's bhava stage, then bhakti is prema bhakti. We actually have to progress through these stages. One who sacrifices his happiness for Krishna's happiness and who remains always engaged in Krishna's service by renouncing his own enjoyment for Krishna's pleasure is a devotee. I was thinking, you know, just like we have words that we throw around, like spiritual master and stuff, so we, of course, devotee. Now, of course, in one sense, it's unavoidable. Hare Krishna people are called devotees. And that's what we call ourselves. We say, oh, he's a devotee. But if you really want, you know, this is what a devotee is. One who acts only for Krishna's pleasure. That's really what a devotee is. He certainly attains auspiciousness. Devotional service is the propensity to give Krishna pleasure. So, I don't know, I'm working on that propensity. My propensity seems to be in the other direction, and I'm trying to redirect it. So here's a little more about gossip. When we gossip or indulge in worldly topics, we become like prostitutes. Gossip content, so again, gossip means worldly topics. It doesn't just mean spreading rumors. Gossip contaminates and disturbs people's hearts. The more taste one has for useless talks, the less natural taste one has for Harikatha. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami said, worldly topics are like prostitutes. They contaminate and disturb one's mind. Those who are serious about worshipping Hari should neither hear nor speak worldly topics. If we maintain a taste for hearing and speaking worldly topics, we will become distracted from the path of worshipping Hari. Such talks will misguide us and force us to forever relinquish our worship. Therefore, persons who are interested in Lord Hari's service must be careful about such things, otherwise they will inevitably fall down. So I just have three more here. They're not too long. The first one's short. The other two are a little bit longer. I'll just read through them. This is the first one. For the service to be actually devotional, it must be intended simply for Krishna's pleasure. One's service should contain nothing motivated by a desire for one's own happiness. Our propensity to serve will increase if we simply serve. If we have no desire at all to serve the spiritual master of Krishna, then what is the question of increasing our service? If our mind is fixed at the spiritual master's lotus feet, then wherever we may be, our propensity to serve will increase. If our mind is fixed otherwise, we will only increase our propensity for sense gratification and material life. By serving the spiritual master continuously, we attain all fortune. And finally, we are infinitesimal spirit souls, and it is our nature to remain surrendered and to take shelter of the infinite soul. Because we listen to so much, with so much dependence to mundane discussions and solutions in the external world, we are unable to depend on the Supreme Lord. Bhaktivinoda says, take shelter of the holy name. I often think of this. What does it mean to take shelter? And you have to turn to Krishna and your problems, and the world is nothing but problems. Only a person who desires nothing from this world, who is a kinchana, and does not depend on objects visible in this world, can faithfully depend on the Lord. By hearing enlightening Harikatha from the mouths of the ever-lively saintly persons and the scriptures, we can come to completely depend on the Supreme Lord. So I think that was a fitting last. It just kind of happened that it's the last one that I chose. So some very serious instructions from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So should we go on? Any questions, or would everyone like to leave? Jitari Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you. Well, I was just wondering, in the Gaudiya mission, is there records of how many, what their congregation was like? Is there a lot of householders? Was there a lot of brahmacharis? Was there a lot of sannyasis? Or do we have any information?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how many. One thing I know that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta initiated 20-some sannyasis. In Bhaktivikasa Swami's book, it gives profiles, like biography on each of them, and maybe a few other well-known devotees in the mutt. But there was a mix, definitely had householder disciples. One thing I heard, he said different things about chanting 64 rounds. And one thing he said one time, he said, well, 64 rounds is not for those living in the mutt because they're fully engaged. It's for the householders outside. They're all in the so you have a job and you chant 64 rounds. So I think, just like Prabhupada sometimes says, you can say it's just the bhava coming out, it's the mood. Maybe you try to say, well, how could you possibly, second guess it, you just take the mood of what's being said sometimes. So as far as the breakdown of how many and so on, he certainly encouraged renunciation. And he demanded a lot of his devotees living in the temples. And his preachers. One thing about the preachers, I noticed most of them were educated. Most of them had college degrees or at least some college. They were that, which is interesting because, of course, sannyasis are meant to be preachers, and of course he wanted, and they're also, you know, the kinds of people who would really study the books very in kind of, like, say, academic way, really learn the philosophy in that way. So I thought that was interesting. He mainly, his sannyasi disciples were mainly people with some advanced education.
Thank you. This is from that same book, from Bhakti Vikasa's book. When a disciple told him, "We don't have time to chant one lakh," Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur retorted, "It is not that chanting is taking time from service. The service is taking time from chanting. No, the idle talks are devouring the time meant for both. So please stop the prajalpa and you will find time to chant a lakh." No, and he says here, "No doubt you're doing considerable service, yet simultaneously so much prajalpa is going on. So stop wasting time."
Regarding your previous statement, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said about chanting 64 rounds. I heard another statement where he says that the householders, because they're outside, they have so much to do, then they can chant less than 64. But the ones living in the mat, they have no excuse.
Yeah. I think it depends who he was speaking to or how he phrased it. Yeah. All right, I think it. Oh, yes, over there. Your name is Rukmini Garkadish, right? Yeah.
Thank you for the wonderful class. I was reminded of the quote, the famous quote by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, "Those who are favored by God, their path are strong with thorns. Those who are favored by God, their path is strewn by thorns."
Oh, their path is strewn by thorns.
Yeah.
Those who are favored by God. Right, okay. Those who are favored by God, their path is strewn with thorns. In other words, Krishna's giving you his mercy by making your life difficult.
I was reminded because you gave those two options, the heat and the thorns.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was like, okay.
Right. Sometimes Krishna gives you the thorns and not just the sun over your head. Yeah. All right. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai. Oh, you can go if you want. Madam Matiya has something.
I was just saying that in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bhaktialoka.
Bhaktialoka, that yeah, book, yeah.
I remember that there is a section about prajalpa. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur goes into detail about for householders. He, in that book, he says what is good for sannyasis, what is for sannyasis, and what's for householders. So he goes from a description about what the householders can speak. Things like that, like it's a long time ago I was read that, but something about, you know, the householders may have to speak about geography or this or that, or something.
Some things they can talk about.
Yeah, so I think it's a good book for householders.
That
for
book is about Upadeshamrita.
Yes.
Yeah, Bhakti Aloka. Hare Krishna.